You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Laura Bruno. Laura is a trained medical intuitive who does soul readings and intuitive coaching. She is versed in the Tarot, Reiki, and inspires and empowers visionaries and healers. She has written two books, Schizandra and the Gates of Mu, and an e-book, Lazy Raw Foodist's Guide. Laura spends her free time painting, organic gardening, listening to sacred chants, traveling, reading, and writing. After many years on the West Coast and in Chicago and Madison, Wisconsin, she now lives in artsy, eco-friendly Goshen, Indiana. Her websites are www.lazyrawfoodist.com and www.ifionlyhadabraininjury.com. You can subscribe to her blog at www.laurabruno.wordpress.com. So let's welcome Laura back to the show now. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi. Doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I always enjoy talking to you. At least the one time we've talked, I've enjoyed it. Well, I see that you have something that I've actually contemplated getting, and I wanted to ask you about it. It's that tower thing.
Oh, yeah. So we haven't planted it.
How does that work, and what does it do, and so on and so forth?
Well, so it's called the Garden Tower Project, and it's actually made in Bloomington, Indiana, so about 3 hours south of here. And it's based on vermicomposting, so using worms to do your composting. So it's not just a planter. It's got this internal chamber where you add all your food scraps, and then you have worms in there, and then you water them, and the worms eat the food scraps, but then the water filters through that, so all your plants are constantly being bathed in these nutrient-rich waters, and then you can collect it underneath and either pour it back on top or use it on your other plants in your other garden, and it will actually make vermicompost for your other plants, too.
Oh, nice.
So it's a pretty cool design. I've not planted it yet. It's just sitting on our porch. But I researched it, and I actually talked to three of the guys at the company because I just think it's such a great thing for our community. So I got it really as a demo. And some other people have bought them, too, from what I understand. But it's not planting weather yet here.
Well, this is kind of a way that people could plant, even if they have limited space or live in apartment complexes and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's it would be great for a sunny patio or for if you are not sure of the quality of your soil. Sometimes, if you live in an urban environment, the soil might have a lot of lead in it or arsenic or something like that. And this way, you put your own combination of soil in it, and it's a totally self-contained system.
Now, what are some of the plants? Can you plant just anything in it? It's or are you limited to a certain kind of produce?
Apparently, you can plant things, but you have to be smart about it. So you have to know what the large size of your plant will be once it's grown. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can plant, I think it's 50 plants, and there's five that you can plant on the top, which are things like tomatoes or carrots or things that need deeper roots. And then the other 45 grow out of the side. And so you can grow cabbage, you can grow different kinds of flowers and lettuces, and then on the bottom you can grow vining crops, so small watermelons or squashes or not the bush kind, but the vining kind. And then I guess you kind of do successional planting. So, for example, you can plant cabbages and then don't have them planted right next to each other, and then have lettuce crops or something smaller in between that you're going to harvest out by the time that the cabbages are full grown, and then they will kind of overtake that spot. So it'll be a little learning curve, but it really seems like it has a lot of potential to grow a lot of food in a very small space.
Yeah, I like the looks of it, and I was thinking it might be ideal for planting all kinds of different salad blends and onions and things that go into salads.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it will be helpful against the slugs, because we always have a real slug issue here, and I'm thinking it's maybe not so comfortable for them to climb up. I don't know if that's true, but that's my hope.
Now, here's a silly question. Where do you get worms?
Well, you can order them online, but that's kind of hit or miss, because you can't really control what the temperature is or how long it takes for them to get to you. And so my understanding is a lot of times they're dead. But we have a guy that I found at a bait and tackle shop. There's a lake near here about a half hour away. And he actually... he raises worms for bait, but he also raises worms for composting. And so he gets really excited if you call him and say, hey, can I come by and pick up a bunch of worms? I did that just for our regular compost bin last year and for the garden, and I noticed just enormous uptick in the size and the health of the plants after I added the worms.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, they do a lot of work down there, don't they? Well, so, but most of your plantings now, you just mentioned to me before the show that most of your plantings are done above ground. So, in other words, you don't dig into the soil, into the earth, and till the soil. You actually have above ground compost bins that you use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have, David had this before we ever got together, but we've kept it because it's pretty effective. It's a black plastic bin, and it has little vents on the side, and because it's black, it really heats up, which helps to get the compost rotting down faster. And I think the round shape of it makes it a little easier to turn. But there's all sorts of composting methods. You can use old pallets as long as they don't have toxins on them. You can just have a pile in your yard if your neighbors don't mind. And you can just kind of let things rot down, or you can very carefully build it and turn it, and you'll get compost a lot faster. But here, our yard, when we took it over... Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that was a blip.
Oh, okay. Our yard it had a lot of trees on it before we moved here, and so there's so much wood in the ground, and when wood is not rotted yet, it can really steal a lot of nitrogen from your plants. So it would just be really hard to plant in the ground and to dig. I mean, we would need heavy equipment to be able to do that. So we just decided to build up with raised beds and sheet mulching.
Well, I see from your blog today that you've got pictures of these raised beds, some of them, yes? I check your blog every day because it varies so much in content, and it's always interesting. So, you know, for those who haven't subscribed yet, you should go check out her blog. And it's always something interesting and informative.
Oh, thanks, Lance.
So what are some of the things that are hitting your perceptual screen in these days since our last show that we might not have talked about in the last interview that are things that are things that you might be in the concerns department that you'd want to share about with us?
You know, I think we did the last show towards the very end of November, and I think I mentioned that I was never so happy to finish a month as I was to finish November 2013. It just seemed like there were so many negative potentials in the works, and it really felt like that month got lived so many times correcting things. And not that there aren't concerns in the world, because obviously with all of the things going on in the Ukraine and the mudslides in Washington and the drought in California, I mean, there's plenty of things to really be upset about. But about a week and a half ago, it was St. Patrick's Day, actually, the late afternoon East Coast time, St. Patrick's Day, I just felt this click, and it was like something shifted, and everything kind of kicked up a notch to a better reality. And it was so noticeable to me right in that moment. But then all these people kept emailing me that week going, hey, did you notice a shift? Do you think something shifted? And so then I ended up posting on it and got a whole bunch more comments and also private emails from people going, it did so shift that day. I felt it too. And some really powerful changes, like breakthroughs that people were sharing from just in the last week and a half or so.
And this was, what date was that?
March 17th was when I noticed it, the afternoon of March 17th, East Coast time.
Okay. It seems like the month of March was a really busy month in terms of clearing, mm-hmm. In a sense that it was a preparation for April.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of predictions out there for April, too, for things that could be very pivotal. I don't know. Last year in the fall, it really felt like there was a lot, not to be afraid of, but there was a lot to kind of walk the tightrope on and mm-hmm. really have multiple plans on multiple levels ready to be acted upon depending on what happened. And mm-hmm. I'm just not feeling that kind of urgency right now. It feels like, at least with the people that I'm in contact with through my work and friendships and just what I see happening locally here, it just feels like even though some of the same agendas are still in the mix and they're still trying to push those kind of global, traumatic type things, it just feels like it doesn't really have the bite that it used to have. So, I mean, that's been my experience and what I'm hearing back from a lot of clients. I don't know that this is a general experience, but it's general enough that I'm seeing it as a pattern.
Mm. And are there any patterns that you see with your clients that seem to match up in other ways that you would say might indicate some kind of trend?
You know, I'm just finding that a lot of people are having really big breakthroughs recently or really finally getting the clarity on certain relationships that they haven't been able to go one way or the other on, kind of that idea too bad to stay, too good to leave, kind of that dynamic. It seems like quite a few people are experiencing where they're recognizing one way or the other, either this is really not right for me, I'm so clear now, I can't believe that I stayed this long, I'm done, or things are just kind of altering and they're balancing out and people are kind of recognizing, yeah, we had our differences, but things are just much smoother now and they're not having the same recycling of issues that they were even a couple weeks ago.
Mm. Well, that's a positive note for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just seeing a lot of positivity these days. And I know that there are exceptions to that. I've posted today about the mudslide in Washington because a resident from Washington that lives near the three towns that were most affected by it emailed me and just said, hey, here's what they're not reporting on the news. And and she was saying that a lot of it's being reported as only 25 people have died, but that's because they've determined that they're only going to say that someone has died if they find their body and are able to identify them and take them to the emergency room or the morgue. And I mean, there's this whole list of actions that need to be gone through before they will determine that someone has died. And so it's actually a much larger disaster than is being reported. So I don't mean to minimize things like that. I know that there are isolated pockets of a lot of sorrow and trauma and challenge. It's just kind of as an overall wave of energy, what I'm seeing come in lately is much more emphasizing the positive and things that were seeming like they could be a huge major health crisis that are just turning out to be a little blip, or situations where something could have gone really, really negatively in a public arena where the community is banding together and all of a sudden it turns out to be something really positive. So I'm just seeing so much of that that it feels like that's becoming a trend.
Well, that's good to hear because it seems like that's something that really needs to happen in any case. You know, with people being so isolated because of cell phones and jobs and fast food and the rest of it, you know, and we know what damage can come from cell phones and from fluorescent lights. You are in particular know a little bit more about that, right?
Yeah, it's kind of an occupational hazard. I can read your energy if you're in Australia, but that means I'm extremely sensitive to energy. And so I definitely have a Q-Link and orgone pucks and different crystals and try to minimize my time even talking on a cell phone if I can help it. It just really is, it zaps the energy. And I can tell, it doesn't happen with everyone, but I've had certain clients that have called me from an iPhone. It's usually the iPhones that seem to really zap people the worst, but that's what I've found. But anyway, some of these people will call and I will notice, hey, your energy is so weak. You know, this is like a really, really weak energy field. And I'll ask them if they have a headset or can they put their phone on speakerphone, and then we'll continue the conversation. And it's incredible the uptick of energy that happens when they put their phone down and put it on a speakerphone or call me back from a landline or something, that they're... the energy field around them is so much stronger.
So what do you see happening with people in the energy? Is it being drained, or, you know, is this something that's going to go on until it becomes a severe crisis, or what?
Well, I think there are enough things that you can do to protect yourself from it. And, I mean, the less wired in we are, the better. So there's obviously benefits to all of the social networking and communication. Information sharing is just so much easier these days, and people are able to keep in touch with each other easier. I think it's kind of like practice telepathy. You know, I think the human race, if we don't allow ourselves to be turned into machines, which there is that agenda, right, the transhumanist agenda.
Right.
If we move beyond that and realize we don't really need the machines to do this interfacing, that some of us are already communicating very telepathically with each other, that we could, as a species, move much more into that, and then there would be no reason to have all of these electronics because they would just be obsolete. So that's one possibility, but I'm grateful that some of the schools, and it's usually in other countries, but they're finding that there is a detrimental effect for all these children to be around all the Wi-Fi all the time. And so I think it was in France recently that they outlawed Wi-Fi in schools. And I know that there are selected communities that are kind of trying to make sure that our children are not just being blasted with all of these waves all day long, every day.
Now, what about one of our favorite subjects? I haven't seen a lot in the news about this, so in some ways that may be more disturbing, and that's the subject of GMOs. What seems to be going on with those lately?
Well, that is a very disturbing problem. I mean, living in northern Indiana, we are completely surrounded by GMOs. I mean, everywhere. And so I would love to see them all banned. I know that Indiana's not going to be the state to lead that movement because we are just corn and soy GMO everywhere. I was talking to an organic farmer who saves his seeds and sells a lot of the unusual varieties, including some soybean. And he was telling me the lengths that he has to go to, even in his very isolated area where he grows, in order to make sure that both his corn and his soy stay unpolluted by the genetic drift. And it's mm-hmm. pretty substantial, and he plants corn, heritage varieties that are either extremely early or extremely late. He tries to avoid when the GMO crops are mostly planted. And then with his soybeans, he sometimes isolates them and hand pollinates. And so there are people that are trying to preserve our genetic diversity, but I think it really needs to be a grassroots education. And as we talked about last time, cheap food and GMO food are pretty synonymous in the U.S., and we have such a huge hunger problem in this country that really addressing the GMO issue needs to go hand in hand with addressing the hunger issue, because you don't just ban all of the cheap food and expect that people are going to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. You've got to provide them with some kind of alternative that is comparable in cost, that has some kind of major benefit to them, because it is going to take them longer to prepare things fresh than it is to throw some ramen noodles, with a boiling cup of water.
Really?
But, so it's a multi-layered issue, but I don't see a lot of people connecting the GMO ban with dealing with hunger. But I just don't see how you can separate that.
Well, of course, then that takes you into the question of the banks and the, the bailouts and everything else.
Yeah, and just the big business in government right now. And I've been trying to raise awareness locally with some of our organic farmers, because the new farm bill, as it came through, it's now illegal to use compost and manure on your crops. It's a safety issue, right? Safety in quotes. But I mean, how do you do organic farming without having manure or compost? There are ways, but it's pretty difficult. And
what was the logic behind that bill?
Well, because the big ag has a lot of pull. And so there's all of this safety guideline for, all these guidelines for all the organic farmers. But guess who's immune from them? The confined animal feeding operations, which are the ones that are causing a lot of the pollution and runoff from their very toxic confined manure operations and all of this stuff, they get a free pass.
Mm-hmm.
But your little local organic farmer that is very hands-on, that's very involved, that has free-range chickens and all of that, not allowed to use the manure from their free-range chickens that they have carefully fed organic food, they're not allowed to use that manure to enrich their fields.
It's
bizarre. I mean, enforcing it is going to be another issue, but that's what's on the books right now. So I don't know what's going to happen. I've talked to some farmers about it, and some of them are saying, well, they'll outlaw dirt. And then maybe that will get some people's attention. But so far, it hasn't. I'm really not sure.
I did see something that I thought was pretty bizarre, and that was there's a new way to kill organic chickens without having to go through the usual process, and they use some kind of a foam that completely fills the pens and suffocates all the chickens.
Oh.
And they can still call it organic food.
Yeah, that is disturbing.
Yeah, it is disturbing.
And, I mean, I don't eat meat, but we had a whole Hens for Goshen initiative that came up in city council, and it passed on the first hearing, and then on the second hearing it really flubbed and it did not pass at all. But it was just interesting hearing people's arguments for and against, and just knowing what's going on with organic farming. I was actually in favor of it, even though I have no intention of having my own chickens or anything. I'm allergic to them, and also just I have enough on my hands with our land right here.
Right, they're a full-time job.
Yeah, but Yeah, it was just interesting listening to people where their argument was primarily, oh, there goes the neighborhood, we've got chickens, and people in these homeowner association communities, well, we want to make sure that ours can never, ever allow that because it's going to destroy property values and all of that. And then on the flip side, listening to people say, well, we really want to know where our food comes from and, you know, eggs, being able to just collect eggs and have our chickens just wander in our yards. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, it was interesting listening to it, but I was the only one that brought this part of it up at the meeting about the food security and saying, look, you know, we live in times where it's becoming more difficult for a lot of people to afford clean food. And as a community, here are the ways that having people have access to clean organic food improves work attendance, improves school attendance and grades and all of that. I mean, there have been studies done where when you change the food, people have much less sickness, they're able to pay attention better, there's more creativity, and I mean, there's all kinds of studies in schools and with work attendance for people that are taking better care of their bodies. And then when you add in the food security issue, I just think it's smart for cities that allow people to kind of step up and want to actually take more of the initiative in providing for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, there's something to be said about the communication between the animals and the people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's something that can be communicated, a kind of a love and affection. And I think kids can learn a lot from having animals and pets and chickens and all those different things, and they learn about other life forms and maybe have a different respect for them afterwards.
Yeah, that was something that was brought up quite a bit in the public comment of the city council meeting, was a lot of people that had young children that they wanted their children to actually know where their food comes
right.
from. One guy... he works on a farm, and they have inner-city kids come visit from Chicago and other locations. And one of the girls was there, and he said to her, well, you know where eggs come from. No, he said, you know what comes from a chicken? And she said, Chicken McNuggets. And he said, well, maybe. We don't really know.
Yeah, no.
But
the jury's out on that one.
She had no idea that eggs came from chicken. I mean, this was just not on this. She was an 11-year-old girl. She had
Whoa.
No idea. And so, and a lot of people that had grown up on farms were just talking about the relationships that they've had with their chickens and how entertaining they are, and they almost become like a part of the family. So these were not people that were thinking of eating their chickens. They were
right.
Really wanting to teach their children more of a respect for nature and how to interact with the animal kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been familiar from your travels with a number of exciting projects around the United States. What are some of the ones that stand out that you've been exposed to that are really doing something innovative and exciting?
Well, one of the ones that I think has had a really far-reaching effect is actually Will Allen's Growing Power, which is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And he's got, it's basically an inner-city farm. And he grows in raised beds, and he does a lot with aquaponics, which is using fish to warm and fertilize. And it's a complex process, and he also does a lot with vermicomposting. And he gets a lot of grant money, and he's got, I think he was saying he has something like 60 streams of income from teaching to traveling and giving lectures to providing a substantial amount of local organic produce for the school system in Milwaukee. And I mean, he's got his fingers in a lot of frying pans, so to speak. And he actually was one of the big inspirations for the Garden Tower project that you started talking about in the beginning. They went up there, the guys took a road trip up there and visited him and were just so excited about the fertility with the worms and the ability to grow a lot of things in a small space. He took over, I think it was a rose greenhouse, a place where they used to grow roses, and was not able to make it profitable until he started going more off-grid. And so he has a lot of solar panels and just alternative heat and ways to combat the Milwaukee, you know, freezing cold temperatures and still grow food year-round.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's a really exciting project. And then Seattle has got a food forest. They've got, I think it's the first official food forest within the United States, where they've got edible fruit and nut trees, but then a planted understory of different herbs and plants and bushes, all of which provide food. And this is, I have some contacts in Seattle still, and they've told me that the city is just really supportive of this project and really on board with it. And I know that's something that we've been talking about getting in Goshen as well, is kind of using that as a model to find. We're probably going to do it in little pockets here and there because that's easier to get it in with the zoning than to try to find someone to dedicate a whole space. But the idea of having urban food forests that can be part park but also provide free food to anyone that needs it. And if you do it right, they're self-sustaining, so it takes some know-how to set it up, but then it's usually based on a permaculture principle, and so everything has multiple functions and it all works together in a naturally integrated process, and then it's not requiring a lot of maintenance from parks or private individuals.
And then people can just stroll through the park and also have lunch off the vine. That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. So that, I hope to see that catch on. And then there's a guy that I know who is, he's near South Bend, and they're changing things up with the company, so I don't have a website because I know they're getting a new one. But this is somebody to kind of keep your eye on, who has managed to turn a major nuisance into an actual benefit. There, when Hurricane Katrina happened, there was flooding of the levees and some kind of very invasive fish. It might be an Asian carp, but don't quote me on that because I forget. It leapt over. It got into the Mississippi River. And this is an ecological nightmare because each of these fish, they lay 200,000 eggs per season.
Wow.
And they just completely invade an ecosystem and knock out all the original species. And there's just so many of them. And so they were starting to get into some of our lakes up here, and it was a real problem, and they were not knowing what to do with these fish. And, I mean, when that sort of thing happens, it's, on the one hand, you don't want to be killing the fish, but by having those fish exist, it's like it's killing off an entire ecosystem. So they had to do something, and they were just throwing this away, and this guy knew some of the people that were in charge of dealing with it, and he said, well, let me see what I can do with it. And he found some way to make a fertilizer out of it, but it's of the entire fish that they were just throwing away. And he found a way to, I think it's fermented. Anyway, the tests that have been done on the farms that he has sprayed with this, they're requiring 40% less water.
Mm.
which is life-changing in a place like the Southwest. There's a lot of people in Arizona that are contacting him. He's trying to get into Southern California. I think some people in Israel have contacted him and said, hey, everybody thinks that it's about a race thing, but it's really a lot about water. So there's huge potential for something so simple to actually change a lot of what people are going to wars for, or you hear people talking about, oh, we're going to have water wars soon because they're selling off the Great Lakes and they're selling off streams and reservoirs and all of that. But if you just have richer soil that doesn't dry out as quickly,
right,
and you need
right.
40% less water, I mean, that's a game changer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to see what's going on. Last I heard, they had gotten a grant from the USDA, but I just know they're changing things up, because until now it's been a very local thing. The Amish farmers, because they don't irrigate, when we get hit by a drought around here, their fields, you can tell, except that the fields that he's worked on with this product, the Amish call the golf course. And so, I mean, these are unirrigated fields, but they're bright green, and some of the horses they've found that are grazing on this that were infertile, they're having young colts. It's really shocking to see the difference in just 1 year of having the soil really nourished.
Amazing.
Yeah. And, I mean, these are Amish farmers who know what they're doing, so it's not like they're just new people that were mismanaging their land.
Right. They're pretty sharp about those things, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Because their horses are also their transportation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, what do you see coming up on the horizon for the next few months and this coming year?
I just can't shake this very positive feeling. It just feels like, even though there are substantial attempts being made to bait us into World War III and to cause famines, and I mean, I'm aware of a lot of the things that are being pushed, it feels like we're reaching some kind of a tipping point where enough people are starting to wake up. And the thing that I'm finding kind of exciting is that I'm seeing a lot more kind of lighthearted parodies of and spoofs and things that formerly people used to either think were complete conspiracy and no, that can't be true, or that they were very afraid of it when they became aware of some of these entities and agendas and everything. And I'm just seeing, I don't spend a ton of time online, but I'm just seeing a lot more kind of lighthearted spoofs of things where it's not trying to deny that an elite exists or that there's an agenda or any of that, but it's almost bringing it into kind of the realm of the ridiculous. And in Celtic tradition, satire was actually one of the most feared weapons. So they would have bards that would sing a satire of the enemy, and the enemies would break out in welts on their face from embarrassment, and some of them would be so mortified they couldn't fight.
Wow.
Yeah, so I see that as kind of an encouraging thing of people starting to take their power back, because if you can ridicule something, not in a mean-spirited way, but in kind of a lighthearted, funny way, like, isn't this bizarre? This is ridiculous. Who would believe this? You know, who would go for this? That when that starts happening, I think you're already seeing victory there.
Yes, it does feel like a page is turning right now, right about now. So, time will tell.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm hoping that more people will start their own home gardens. even if it's just a little windowsill herb garden or a garden tower or join a community garden. There's just such a need right now to get back in touch with growing things and remembering how things start to grow, whether you're growing it from seed or whether you buy plants from someone else. There's just something that happens to people when they start really observing nature. Mm-hmm. And I think that on the practical level, it's really important to know how to grow your own food because that makes you much more independent to manipulation. But also just on a real physical grounding kind of level, in a way to make yourself less influenced by propaganda and by tricks and mind control and all of that kind of stuff that's in advertisements and, you know, increasingly in city council meetings. And I mean, it's pervasive, common core, all of that. But when you start exposing yourself to nature and you just start seeing patterns in nature and how things unfold, it's like re-educating yourself back to your natural state. And the more of us that do that, the better our world's going to be.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And in addition to that, the benefits are so many. Just the most obvious thing is the flavors of your own foods that are grown in your own soil are so much superior to that of store-bought food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's been shipped halfway across the country, pulled early because it has to stay green, and they can't let things ripen on the vine, so there's no flavor to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they spray them with all these different things, and I've heard that they even irradiate most of the vegetables that come through the major grocery outlets.
Yeah, including organics, I have heard.
Right.
So
there
yeah.
goes your organic food, down the, that would take out any subtle nutrients that the vegetables could have.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah,
course,
and my understanding is if you buy directly from farmers at this point, in the U.S. anyway, you're still getting farm fresh produce. But I know they're trying to change that. And I think that was a part that may still be in the works. But there's parts of Europe, I know you've had Julian Rose on, and he sends out his periodic announcements of what's going on with organic farmers over there. And they had that big victory of getting GMOs out of Poland, but then they changed the whole government, and now there's more pro-GMO people in there, and they're finding different ways to go after the organic farmers, trying to require them to build these really expensive structures for food processing that they don't even want to do on their property. And so there's all these tricks, but I just think they can't go after everybody all at once. And if we're all doing different things and we're supporting our organic farmers, but we're also growing our own food on our own land or our own balcony, and we're having community gardens, and, it just becomes kind of a why bother? Like they can't fight that many people doing that many different things.
Mm. Well, you would hope so, but I don't think that they would share that opinion. I think it's, we will take over the world.
Well, I'm sure that's what they're wanting, but having that desire and being able to implement it. I mean, food is such a tricky thing because it's so connected with your level of consciousness. And so it's not just when people are growing their own organic food or, you know, supporting farmers that don't spray the pesticides and the herbicides and all of that. It's not just that you're voting for independence and for heritage crops and for freedom and all of that. You are. But also when you get a lot of that processed junk out of your life, all of a sudden the cobwebs start to go away. And
thank
so
you.
There's a consciousness awakening that you really can't stop. Once it happens, it just happens.
Yes, And I think that goes also with your water, that, if you switch from drinking tap water to drinking pure distilled waters, you find that your body is cleansed from a lot of the toxins that have been accumulated, like the toxic fluoride that's in the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in addition to what you were saying, there's a life force to plants, and it's been proven, And I can't remember the scientist's name, but he it was the one that measures the bioelectric field of the plants and, you know, it would have noticed that when somebody got too close to a plant with a match that the plant was shrieking and on, you know. And so they do sense everything around them.
Yeah.
And it seems like that would be a natural occurrence that they would have to in order to survive. They may not be able to uproot and run, but they understand danger, and they understand the difference between somebody who's not intending to light a match near them and somebody who's just doing it with not without the intent. So they read your intent. So there's a lot of consciousness to the plant itself, and of course you could get into, you know, the devas and the overlighting devas and the fairies and the elementals and the rest of it if you want to.
Well, I mean, people would be so humbled if they read, I think it was called The Secret Life of Plants, and there's a video about it. And then also if you study the mycelium, so the fungal, you know, the mushrooms and the way they interconnect underneath the soil. And I mean, it's so humbling. Humans are, in some ways, humans are operating at a lesser level of awareness than fungus and plants. And I mean, that is, that's something to kind of ponder and really take in and go, hey, whoa,
right.
You know, it doesn't need to be that way. I could be more conscious.
Absolutely. Well, so what else can we talk about on the show tonight?
Well, how about your planting? And because aren't you creating some kind of a healing center there? Or you're doing some gardening and planting and liberating there, aren't you?
I'm doing all of that. I'm refurbishing an old house into a healing center. And I've got about an acre of land that needs to be tilled and planted and all of that. So my work is ahead of me. When it stops raining here in a few days, I'll be out there, you know, starting to, you know, plan, dig, weed, and so on. So my lazy days are numbered.
Oh, that's okay. It's good to get out there.
Oh, I love it. I love
it.
And I love putting my hands in the soil. And I wish I could follow some of the steps that Anastasia took in the Ringing Cedar series that was written in Russia, because there's so many wonderful ideas in those books about, you know, about the wisdom of the plants and the spirit of the plants. And, you know, I may get to try some of the things that she mentions in the early books.
Yeah, well, I think just tuning in, I mean, whether you're going on a walk in the woods and just listening to the sounds of the trees or whether you're growing basil, I mean, it's the same kind of approach, or at least it can be, where you're just being very mindful and you're listening. And, I mean, the plants will talk with you. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, there's
no question about it.
Yeah, and there's great wisdom in trees, and just observing. I think that's kind of the antidote. You were asking about Wi-Fi and all of that, and I mean, I love my orgone pucks, and actually, I mean, maybe we should talk about that. I got all these orgone pucks that I bought just kind of as an experiment, and I was so impressed at how they helped me deal with our smart meter that I got more. And ever since I bought them, no chemtrails can stick above our house.
Tell me about that, and where you find what do they do, and where did you find them?
Well, I had heard about orgone energy for years, and I just thought it was probably like Reiki, you know, universal life force energy. But the thing with orgone is that there's something called DOR, so deadly orgone energy, and this was all studied by Wilhelm Reich, and he had cloud busters, and his idea was to help to make it so that there were not droughts. And because a lot of these are engineered, and so the idea was that you could bust clouds with a positive energy. And his problem was that he'd get these orgone accumulators, and they would also accumulate the toxic negative orgone, and then you had to dispose of it. And so a guy named Karl-Hans Welz invented something called Orgonite, which has a quartz crystal inside of it, and then it's got resin mixed with different kinds of metal shavings, and the resin dries, it shrinks and it puts a pressure on the quartz that makes kind of a charge, and I don't really understand how it works, but it transmutes the negative energy.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about that a while back.
Mm-hmm. I got mine from
yourself, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. You can make the pucks, but I don't, because the resin is pretty toxic, and you should do it outside or in a big workshop or something like that, which I don't have. But you can make them, or I get them from a company called Orgonia, and I've just been so happy. But it's amazing to see these cloud formations, and you'll see a chemtrail, and you know, it's like it wants to be a chemtrail, but it kind of peters out. And you see these sylphs and these kind of poofy clouds. It's like they come in for the attack, and they just disband it.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Do you think that we'll live to see the day of the end of the chemtrails?
I sure hope so. I mean, I just don't know how they're going to continue to find people to do these things, which is probably why they're working so hard on the whole transhumanist agenda, because eventually you're going to run out of useful idiots. And,
right.
You know, so.
Or greedy ones.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that really sticks out the most for me from working with the fairies and doing work with the fairy realm is this idea that the fairy realm has the original imprint for planet Earth that is completely healed, that is in its original, beautiful, pure form, and that always exists no matter what. You just need to be able to tune into that, and that the more of us that are able to recognize that, even if it's just a little glimmer, the more of us that are able to see that. And there's a reason that people like me and others are being called to these really kind of ugly landscapes and just passionately working to re-nourish the soil and to replant it and beautify it. The more of us that are doing that, especially in the areas that have been most damaged by industry or overbuilding or, you know, whatever, the more of us that are doing that, the more we're invoking that healed realm. And so I don't think we're going to get at it in a linear way, but I think there are linear tasks that we can each be doing. And then the more that we do and the more that we're holding that vision as we're doing it, I think we're going to get some kind of magical tipping point where things are just healed.
Well, of course, then there's the planet herself and her will. It doesn't seem that she's actually shaken off the fleas yet, but it's conceivable that she could do something drastic to tilt the scales.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a wild card in terms of how and when, but yeah, literal wild card.
Right. Well, of course, you have the movie, the trees, the tower, the tower with the eye in it, and
The Hobbit
and all that.
The Hobbit series.
Yeah.
The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And towards the end, you have the trees where they have to. The last hope are the trees, the old trees, and so they have to literally uproot and walk. It was a fascinating thing. And I don't think you would have put that in there if there wasn't some truth to it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, trees hold great, great wisdom. And I mean, how many 400 or 1,000-year-old people do you know? But you can go to the redwoods and find trees. Or there's trees in other parts of the world that are, you know, 1,000 years old. I mean, that's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've seen a lot.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we still have our work cut out for us, and I don't mean to make light of that fact. I just really feel this positive infusion that was not there to this extent, say, last November. Something positive.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, that seems like a good note to segue into the last minute or two when you can share whatever you'd like to share with the listeners and also let people know where we can find your websites and things.
Okay. Well, I have actually three books. If I Only Had a Brain Injury, .com is a book on healing from brain injury, Lyme disease, kind of a medical intuitive look at medical mysteries and how to walk yourself through a healing process for that. And then The Lazy Raw Foodist Guide is an ebook only, but that is at lazyrawfoodist.com, and it helps you find your own journey for raw food, because there's a lot of gurus out there and, you know, this diet or that diet or that diet, and this is more about how do you figure out what works for you, and that can change, and how do you know if it's changing. And then my main blog, which also has information about my intuitive services, is just laurabruno.wordpress.com. And, yeah, you're right. I write on a whole bunch of different topics.
Oh, I love your blog. I think everybody would enjoy signing up for it.
Oh, thanks. And then my novel is Shazandra and the Gates of Mu, and that's on Amazon. And that is, it's based about 2012, but it's also about inner earth and other world beings and how do we embrace our own intuition. And there's a lot of ancient history in there about Atlantis and Lemuria that I've gleaned just from doing past life work, either on myself or with other people.
Well, Laura, thank you for coming back again. It's always fun to talk to you. I just love your work, and keep it up, and I'm sure we'll be talking again in a few months.
All right. Well, thanks so much, and good luck to you with all you've got going on. Lots of exciting stuff in your life, too.
All right. Good night, Laura, and good night, everybody.